Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Clay Johnson, Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget. Also joining us in our conversation is John Nyland, Managing Partner for IBM's Global Business Services in the public sector. Clay, continuing with our discussion on the part, how have federal agencies dealt with the requirements of the part, and what strategies have they employed to be successful, and what are some of the challenges that they continue to face today?
I'm going to give you a little bit more of a historical answer than maybe you asked for, but that initially there was a lot of skepticism about the part because they thought that analyzing programs was code for let's get rid of programs that the administration is not interested in and blame it on performance. So there was not enthusiastic acceptance of the part for, say, the first 12 months of the president's management agenda being in effect. But then agencies and federal employees began to realize that this was about programs working better, programs that were priorities and programs that were not priorities working better. There's another process for deciding whether we get rid of programs or not. But from the management world, we want all programs to work. We want great programs to work even better, and we want bad programs to work at an acceptable level. So their initial response was a reluctant participation, and then it became enthusiastic. And one of their big challenges initially was to develop measures of success. In the first year, when we evaluated 20% of all the programs in the federal government, half the programs evaluated in that first year could not demonstrate a result, either positive or negative or neutral. The reason for this was nobody was asking. Nobody was asking, what have you done for me lately? How are you performing as an organization? So what agencies have probably spent the most time on in the last 5-6 years as a result of the part is get clearer definitions of success. You can't hold employees at the lowest level, the medium level, or the senior manager of a program responsible unless you can define clearly what success is. I think that's what the most of the energy has been focused on is let's clearly define success and then develop action plans for developing it, for accomplishing success. Let's develop relevant measures of performance. And what this allows us to do, it makes the part relevant to great programs, medium programs, and bad programs. It's not just a tool for programs that are performing at an inadequate level. It's a tool for every program because we want every program to work better than it did the year before.
So let me explore this a little bit more. How does a program's part score influence, say, its budget, either in the president's budget recommendation or the congressional considerations? And what effort is the administration making to generate interest in program performance on the Hill?
I think there's a tendency to believe that its primary purpose, the primary purpose of the part, is to help set the program's budget. It should be a major piece of information that appropriators and OMB staff look at when they recommend and agree on a budget or disagree on a budget. But performance should be an issue. Nothing should happen automatically because a program performs or doesn't perform. Sometimes a program doesn't perform because it's brand new and it's hard and we don't know how to slay the monster, and so we're working on it. And sometimes we're not spending enough money on key aspects of the program's operation for it to be successful. And so in some cases we have recommended that spending be increased to cause it to be more effective. So nothing should happen automatically because a program works or it doesn't. Some people would like to have programs automatically go away or be expanded if they based on whether they work or not. That should not be the case. The primary purpose of the part is to help management and people who oversee the program's performance in Congress work together to cause it to be more effective. And a secondary but very important use of it is to inform the budget process. Now, you ask about what are we doing to work with members of Congress. Some members of Congress understand program performance. They get it. They're behind it. They like it. And their constituents expect them to pay attention to how the taxpayers' money is being spent. Other members of Congress fear it. They would prefer not to have to factor in whether a program works or not. It's more difficult. It's easier to pay attention to how much money you're spending on a program than it is to pay attention to what we're getting for the money. And maybe their constituents are less interested in whether programs work or not. They're more interested in how much money we're spending on a given program. So when we talk about the Hill is a combination of 535 different viewpoints about program performance. every committee, every authorizing committee, every appropriating committee is different. And so what we are doing to work with members of Congress is to work with every committee in the ways that make sense for them. Some of them are very receptive. Some of them have been very reluctant to talk to us about program performance. Some used to be reluctant. Now they're receptive. Some are still reluctant. Some have been receptive and now they're enthusiastic. So they all have different needs. They need better, different levels of communication, education. We need to show them how it can help them be better congressmen or senators, how it can help them better serve and represent their constituents. And so it's a big educational challenge and opportunity to do it right for the agencies and for OMB. But every member of Congress and every committee is different.
Now, along these lines, I've heard that some agencies have expressed concern over the fairness or the consistency of the PART process, and in particular, their PART scores. Is this due to the inherent nature of the programs these departments operate? Is it related to something else? And is there a specific PART appeals process, so to speak? And if there is, how does this work?
Well, the validity and the objectivity of these PART scores is a big priority. If they are known to be biased or developed haphazardly, then there's no reason to pay attention to it. And so we've made this a priority from day one. Every year when PART scores are developed, there are consistency checks. We also then compare the similar programs across agencies to see that they're being evaluated consistently. So we do a lot of checking on the validity and objectivity of these. We've gotten better at it. I think the scores we have now for in years 4 and years 5 are probably more objective than they were in years 1 and 2. But there's a lot of attention being paid to that. There is an appeals process. If you are in disagreement in an agency with your OMB counterparts over the score, we create an appeals board every year that I chair, and we get deputy secretaries from 2 or 3 agencies or the head of some of these smaller independent agencies. And very detailed briefing books are prepared, and they go over the material, they review it, and we make decisions. And sometimes we change the PART scores. Often we accept it, but a lot of effort goes into this appeals process, and it's a really commendable process. So I think there might be some general grousing about objectivity and so forth, but I bet by and large the acceptance of the PART scores is very, very high.
Clay, in February last year, OMB unveiled a new website, www.expectmore.gov. Can you elaborate a little on expectmore.gov and what's the purpose of the site? What does it contain? And are there any plans to expand its application and use in the future?
We're very excited about Expect More. We think it's a really neat concept. One of the things we've tried to do is to get Congress to pay more attention to whether programs work or not, and interest groups more pay more attention to whether programs work or not, and agency personnel to pay more attention to whether programs work or not. And we realized, well, one way to make this happen is to make all this performance information really, really public, really unavoidable. You can't pretend that the information about a program not working isn't out there. You can't pretend that a program doesn't work because it's known to one and all that it does if this information is really public. So this information had all been in the public domain. You had to really know where to go get it. You had to be able to read OMB's version of English. So we decided we would make it much more public and much more readable by a lay audience. And so a lot of effort went into doing this, and we decided we would call it expectmore.gov, thinking you should expect more from your federal government. You have a right to know how your money's being spent and where it's being spent well and where it's not being spent well, and in every case, where it's being spent well or not, in every case, what we're doing to make it work better. We did focus groups with people asking them to review some of our write-ups and got great feedback about what they understood and didn't understand and kind of information they would pay most attention to. One of the things that we found out from these focus groups was we asked them if they would expect to get information from the federal government about how programs worked. And we did 4 focus groups, and about half the people we talked to said, yeah, they would expect that from the federal government. Then we asked them, if you got information like this from the federal government, would you expect it to be objective? Nobody, not one person, thought it would be objective. The thing that that told us is these better be really clear, clearly written, very substantiatable, all kinds of checks and balances, all sorts of quality control, because the readers are going to be doubting Thomas. They're not going to be inclined to believe this. They're going to be inclined to view it as a one administration trying to sell its particular agenda to the American people. So it has created lots of attention in Congress. We've had authorizing committees call us and ask about the programs that don't work. And we've asked them, why are you asking us this? Because I said we want to spend all of our oversight hearings focusing on these programs that don't work. Bingo. That's it. That's the thing. That's the answer. Gallaudet University, which has had some difficult leadership difficulties and challenges installing a new president and a lot of unrest amongst the students, was evaluated to be a program that was ineffective. It receives a lot of money from the federal government. It graduates 42% of its students. That's unacceptable by anybody's standards. So it was made very public that Gallaudet was rated ineffective via the part. It confirmed what a lot of students were saying, which was our school needs to be better than this. So it became one of the things they referred to in their laundry list of things they thought needed to be fixed at Gallaudet. And I guarantee you, as a result of the part score and a lot of other gripes that the students had, there have been more conversations about how to make Gallaudet the wonderful university it used to be and can be in the last couple of months than maybe had taken place in the past many years. So the idea is to prompt behavior and prompt discourse about whether things work or not, and if they don't, what are we going to do about them? And if they do, what are we going to do about them to make them work better?
You know, some at OMB have said that expectmore.gov is the widest and deepest resource on the effectiveness of the federal government on the web. Now, I understand the publishing of successes, but what really is the benefit of disclosing failures or highlighting those programs that are in red or yellow status?
I love that question because I've had very senior members of this administration ask me directly and ask other people, why on earth are we making it public what doesn't work? And my response to them is, well, first of all, let me ask you, do you think the American public really believes that all this stuff works? I think the American people are shocked to find out that as many of these programs work as we say they do. They know a lot of this stuff doesn't work, so they're not surprised by some things work better than others. When by saying that this works and this doesn't work, we're saying we are committed to fix everything. When we talk about a program that doesn't work and here's why it doesn't work, what we're saying is we know why it doesn't work and this is what we're going to focus on. If we have a program that works great, we say here are the things that could work even better, so here's what we're going to do to make it go from great to fantastic. People give us so much credit for the candor and the commitment to doing well by talking about our successes and our failures that the benefit of that far exceeds some unrest that might be stirred up by talking about some parts of the federal government that don't work. So it's critical. You have to be honest about where you are. You have to be honest whether you're talking with an individual employee about what they're doing well and not, and you have to be honest with a leader of a program or a leader of an agency about what's doing well and not. Everything at HUD and at Interior and at Ag and the Defense Department don't work the way they should. Some things do, some don't. Let's call them for what they are and focus on everything working better, but be targeted about what it is we're trying to fix.
That's fantastic. What does the future hold for the PMA, the PART, and other government management reforms? We will ask Clay Johnson, Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.